Authenticity, curiosity, intimacy. These are important for success in your personal life. But they are also the foundations of a new mindset leading to true success, fulfillment, and happiness in business. A New Business Mindset is a series of conversations with business leaders in which they share the importance of real business relationships founded and based upon authenticity, curiosity, and intimacy. It is a show in which we learn how to cultivate a new business mindset and become more successful, fulfilled, and happy in our own careers. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome once again to New Business Mindset, one of the highlights of my week. And once again, I'm delighted to be in the studio with my co-host, Todd Schnick. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Hello, Gareth. How are you? Looking forward to the show.
I'm doing extremely well. I'm also looking forward to the show. And as always, when I come into the studio, I spend a minute just reflecting on last week. And
I'm still,
boy, what a ball of energy Melissa
was. I'm still trying to get over that conversation. Boy, I don't know where to begin. The two things that I thought about most post-show was this idea that risky is the new safe.
Uh-huh.
I like that idea. And then our conversation around work-life fusion,
I thought that was really neat.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really neat idea. Yeah, she was just a bundle of great ideas and great energy for us.
Mm-hmm.
We have another wonderful human being on the show with us this afternoon, Kit Cummings. Kit is an international speaker, teacher, and founder of Power of Peace Productions, Inc. and Power of Peace Project, Inc. He's worked with nonprofits and Fortune 500s over a 25-year career, and his message has been picked up by major TV networks and all sorts of other places. He's worked in and brought his message of peace and love to audiences around the world. He recently completed speaking tours in South Africa, Mexico, Honduras, and Ukraine. He's negotiated peace between rival gang leaders in dangerous prisons and also recently spoke at the Gandhi Global Peace Summit in Durban, South Africa. He's spoken and taught in some of the toughest and most dangerous environments imaginable. And now he brings his dynamic message to corporate events, schools, associations, conferences. It's a very powerful message, and I'm just thrilled that Kit's with us on the show today. Good afternoon, Kit.
Good afternoon. Thanks so much for having me.
Tell us a little bit about the Power of Peace Project.
Power of Peace Project is a nonprofit. It was an idea that led to an experiment, which developed into a program, which has now evolved into a movement. And it's one of those things that a series of events happened that I look back on, and it's like, I couldn't have planned that. I couldn't have come up with this and said, here's what I want to do. It was one thing after another, and I've just been trying to keep up ever since.
Right.
And it was an experiment inside a dangerous maximum security prison that happened to be going through a gang war. And it was the right place, the right time, the right people. I had gone in there as a volunteer on a prison ministry weekend, and for a long time now, I've been telling people wherever I go wherever I'm invited, just invite me. So that's taken me some crazy places. So I found myself in that prison one weekend, and I was fascinated because it wasn't what I expected to find. People have seen the prison shows, Hard Time and Locked Up and Gangland and all these Scared Straight programs. And it's fascinating because people like to look at a train wreck. I mean, it's dark and it's edgy. But I got in there and I didn't find that. I found real people that, if given the choice, would rather have peace than violence. And that, if asked, would help with coming up with solutions. Nobody had ever thought about asking them. And so I challenged 12 guys to a peace movement built on Dr. Martin Luther King's principles. And we launched on his birthday in 2011 in January. And magic happened in that place. And there was a peace that came to Georgia's most violent prison over a 40-day period. And they won Institution of the Year that year in the state of Georgia, which got everybody's attention. And there was credit given to this program. And ever since then, it's just been trying to continue to keep up with the momentum of it. And I've developed a curriculum around it. And it's taken me not just into prisons, but now we've backed up into a prevention program with kids.
Right.
And I still do my corporate motivational speaking. And it's a fascinating topic. Every speaker or teacher has a niche. And mine is, oh, you work with those bad guys.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, let me work with your managers.
So without getting into the details of the curriculum, what are the like two or three core elements of how this works? What is it that gels a bunch of hardened criminals to come together in a way that helps them make peace?
Okay. It's built on principles. With them, I ask a series of questions. Does anybody want to do hard time? Nobody ever raises their hand because we're built to live in peace. Raise your hand if you have families that you love, that you would like to go home to. Everybody raise their hand because we're built to live in community. And I asked them, do you know when something's about to happen? Do you have the power to stop it? And they said, yeah, almost always. And so we put those together and say, you want to have easy time. You want to go home one day to your families, and you can stop it if you want to. And so I challenged them, all right, then let's start. Let's pull together. And it's amazing because rival gangs, everybody wants peace, but they're just worried that I'm not going to do it if you don't do it. And it's the same thing in, you know, families, churches, businesses, schools. Where there is peace, then productivity and education and programs rise. Mm-hmm. Where there is violence and conflict, those things go away. And we go back to our basic instincts of survival. So it works because it goes to what all of us are born for and want anyway.
When you made the comment earlier, no one ever asked them if they wanted peace. Mm-hmm. I suspect those false assumptions are a cause for 99% of the world's problems. Mm-hmm. That we always just go into any situation, whether it's in a prison, whether it's in the boardroom or in the family room, and we make assumptions about people without even wondering if that's where they really stand. Why do we do that? I mean, you just said we're wired for these certain things, but yet we still do that. Why? Do you have a theory on that?
I think it's so much of what we're dealing with as a, not just a nation anymore, but as a worldwide, we've all been connected now. The world's smaller and we're all connected through this brain, you know, called the internet and the social connection we have now. And so many people are living by fear and they might not even be aware of it. But I think there's two places that we come from, always love or fear. And we fear what we do not know. We've learned growing up, you can't help this, but we learn to make judgments, and it's part of the way we protect ourselves. We want our kids to do that. We teach them to size up a person, you know, and worry about threats. But we get to be 35, 40, 45, and if we're not aware, our whole life is driven by fear, and we judge everything. You know, I went into the most intense areas, really, in different parts of the world, and definitely into the darkest places, and I saw human beings that if looked at without judgment, and if sincerely, and I love the word authenticity, you know, with intimacy and curiosity and authenticity. You take that anywhere and it works.
What I take away from it, a lot of it, is you're creating an environment in these places or in these communities, these gatherings where you get people together, where you are cultivating that level of openness and of non-judgmentalism. Mm-hmm. You're encouraging the people who show up to not judge anybody else, to really show up, be themselves, bring them full selves there, and to connect with each other as human beings. Mm-hmm. Am I characterizing this right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where the power of this program, it cuts across social, socioeconomic, ethnic, cultural, religious, gender, age, because this goes to everybody. If I look at you, Gareth, and there was a time not too long ago, we didn't know each other at all. We knew each other from probably social media or however we connected. And I had no idea until we spent time together. And I asked questions and I listened and I sought to understand. And we found that there was so much commonality between us. But we didn't know that until we sat down together, broke bread together. So in these prisons, you've got natural rivals, you know, whether it be Christian, Muslim, Jew, black, white, Crip, blood, east side, west side. And they've grown up hating and they don't even know why anymore. We see that in the Middle East. We see that, you know, in the Palestinian, you know, Israeli conflict or Ukraine and Russia. I mean, it's all over the world. You know, a little bit of what we do, imagine this, is they commit to 7 principles for 40 days. They wear a wristband that shows that they're a member of the process. And here's what they commit to. For 40 days in a row, I'm going to sit down with people that aren't like me. And I'm going to seek first to understand. One, I'm going to find common ground with my rivals. I'm going to walk a mile in my enemy's shoes before I judge. I'll practice active listening. I'll practice compassionate communication. When I'm wrong, I'll admit it, make amends, and I'll treat my enemies with dignity and respect, even when we disagree. So what I'm doing is saying, if I can sit down with you and try to figure out what life is in your shoes, where you come from, golly, at the end of a day, much less 40, I'm going to have a better understanding of you, and I'm going to find out that you weren't what I thought you were. It's harder to hate up close. Hate happens at a distance. So let's bring them together and let them do life together and magic happens. And they're high-fiving their enemies on the 40th day while they get their certificates and celebrate together.
A big step that you've described to me before, Kit, is so you had these successes in the prison environment, and then you found that that success gave your work credibility in certain school situations. So you're able to bring the same kind of body of work to high schools.
Right.
And you're also doing work in the corporate world and more broadly. Mm-hmm. These ideas of prisoners, you know, it's easy to look down at the prison system, you know, and these bad people in jails. Mm-hmm. So we can look at the polarization between gangs, but to some extent, to a lot of extent, that polarization is there in all of our lives, mm-hmm. in the business world and everyday life. So talk about bringing those same techniques, those same skills, and using them and the rest of the world.
Absolutely. An interesting connection happened because the world, and especially young people, but everybody is tuned in and watching these things. And we become what we see.
Mm-hmm.
And so our kids are growing. I mean, think about what they're looking at, what they're watching, listening to, reading, talking about, and that's what they're becoming.
Right.
And it's the same in a corporate culture, whether it's sales or management. If you could teach your sales force, one, to come from a place of love instead of fear, and to figure mm-hmm. out their big why, what drives you, not just you want to close that deal, why, and then keep drilling deeper into the big right. why. If your why is not bigger than your best excuse, your biggest fear, your biggest obstacle, then you'll quit and you'll fail. But if your why is bigger than those things, it'll drive you past barriers. But, you know, in a sales situation, if I go into an appointment, you can't fake this. If I honestly go into it, I want to seek first to understand my prospect. I want to find right. common ground with this prospective client. I want to walk a mile in his shoes and figure out what's his pain, what is his need, and I'm going to actively listen. How many salespeople don't listen?
Right.
They don't ask good questions. They don't shut up and listen. You know, the answers are in the silence. You know, in sales, next one to speak loses. Ask a question and then shut up. You know, there's so many people that don't do these things.
Right.
You just don't treat people like humans.
Exactly.
They're a line item in a database.
There you go.
If you would just treat them like a human being.
Yeah.
And understand that maybe the reason they're not calling you back isn't because they don't like your product. It's because they're dealing with life. I listened to you talk about how you diffuse a gang war. And I listened to you talk about how a sales rep can just infuse their process with humanity and it changes everything. It seems so easy, but why do we resist that? I mean, it's a similar question that I asked before. I just don't understand it. I feel like that in business, we're trained to be combative.
Yeah.
It's about winning. It's about beating the competition. It's about you're going to get penalized if you don't meet your numbers. It's because they're coming at it from fear.
That's it.
Your fear I'm not going to make. It's approaching sales with love. It changes everything.
Yeah. And it sounds, that almost sounds too fluffy to be sexy, you know,
problem.
Or to have grit. It's like, oh, okay, we're going to teach ourselves.
I'm a hard businessman. But if you allow yourself to think on that,
yes,
it changes your entire perspective and the relationship you'll develop with that prospect.
Yeah. Or even management. Yeah. I mean, think about great leaders are not afraid. As a matter of fact, like for instance, Popovich, the Hall of Fame Spurs coach
of the Spurs,
right?
Yep.
That is the... That team is not sexy, as you say. They're not, you don't have superstars. They win and they keep winning. And everybody's like, how do they win? It's so boring to watch them. Tim Duncan is boring, but he's a Hall of Famer. He's best ever been at that position, right? Some say. But what's great about the Popovich or the Krzyzewski or even the, not even, but Bobby Knight, who's a firebrand, is how many coaches are out there successful because they coached under him. And see, great leaders are not threatened to raise up somebody, but an insecure leader, a leader with a great big ego, I'm afraid for you to raise up because that threatens my place. And it goes against the natural order of things because if I make you successful, I'm successful. If I make you wealthy, I get wealthy. You know what I'm saying? If you become greater than me, then I'm blessed by that. But I think if you're fearful and you're afraid of somebody taking what you have, then you isolate, you know, and it caps you.
So this program started in 2011, mm-hmm. which is a handful of years away.
Mm-hmm.
And as I look at you, Kit, you have less gray hair than me, but you have a few gray hairs. So there was a Kit Cummings life before Parapiece.
Mm-hmm.
How did you move through life and into this? What is it that inspired you and said, wow, here I go?
Yeah.
What is it that put you in this place?
I'm so glad you asked that because I love to tell this story. And this goes to exactly what we were just talking about. For so many years, the dark parts of my life, I was afraid to show people because
right.
the illusion is, man, if they know who I really am, they're not going to respect me. And so I was not authentic, right? And then I began to tell my story. Yeah, I grew up here 50 years in and around Atlanta. This is my city. And I know a lot of people. And least likely guy to become a preacher, and I did at the age of 25. Unchurched, unschooled, wild man becomes a preacher. And I find out I have a gift I never knew I had. And they kept promoting me. I got bigger and bigger churches. Then I got more churches. And I had all these people that were laughing at all my jokes and standing at the end of every speech and lining up to shake my hand. And I was young and I was ambitious and I was afraid. Big ego, afraid to lose what was mine. So I started holding on tighter and tighter. And that's not sustainable. I burn out at the age of 40, started at 25. At 40, I was tired and I just resigned, walked away. Couldn't handle it. It was too heavy. And I walked into a storm. Luckily, it was a short little storm. But, you know, we have a disease of addiction that runs through one of the sides of my family. And it is a generational thing. And I say that with no shame to help anybody's listening, that there's help and there's hope, but there doesn't need to be all this shame. And so luckily, I was able to interrupt and redirect that. Mm-hmm. But I came back to my love, which is speaking, teaching. I'd done that for so many years, and I came back to it with a clear mind and a sober, and I came alive again, but I had a big heart for people in pain and that had lost some things because now I experienced some of that. And that's why there's so much power in these prisons and these tough schools is because they've experienced pain. And I can resonate with that. And again, if we cross it over into the corporate world, where it be sales or management executives, if you can identify with what people are going through, oh man, you can reach them and they will follow you. I mean, they will follow you wherever you want to go. But if they don't relate to you, and so I started telling my story to big audiences and I saw tears and people laughing and people nodding their heads because here was somebody who had fallen and gotten back up and they need to hear that about hope. So I'm not a great guy that just loves to help people for no reason. I'm a broken guy that somebody helped, and now I love to go back and help people.
There's a piece in that I think you can still help me with, and I think help our audience with. You fell apart. You fell back into the cycles of addiction. Mm-hmm. You fell deep into your own suffering. Mm-hmm. It's very, very easy when that happens. And that's happened to me in the past. And when that's happened, it's very, very easy from experience to stay wallowing in that morass of self-despair and to become really self-indulgent. But somehow that's not the course you chose. You ended up becoming intimate with your fear, if you like, becoming intimate with your suffering. And you brought that richly and fully into your life as something you embraced as part of who you are, and you were able to share that. That's a transformational event there, Kit. Yeah. How did that happen?
Well, I remember a turning point. I mean, I remember where we were. It wasn't far from here. I was sitting in a car with a good friend of mine, a mentor, and I was at my bottom. I mean, it was dark, it was raining, it was a night. I can remember it like it was yesterday, and it was a decade ago. An older, wiser, spiritual man that I love to this day, he looked at me and he said, "Don't run from the pain, embrace it. It'll set you free." And I was like, "Oh, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hurt anymore. What else you got?" You know what I'm saying? I didn't like that idea, but it was like people are so afraid of pain. And if you think about all the things people are doing to escape pain, drugs and alcohol and sex and work and work and work and money and money, and I'm going to get bigger things and shinier things. And then you get them. It's like, it's more problems. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I decided I'd had enough. I mean, when you're, you know, sick and tired of being sick and tired is one of the things you hear in recovery. And what I found is, and people have been telling me this for a long time, but I didn't understand it until I did it, is you can't keep something you don't give away.
Right.
And that's why the successful leader might lose his success. If once you get what you think you wanted and then you hoard it, whatever you don't appreciate, you lose. Right. If you hold on too tightly to, you lose. And so you can't give away or keep what you don't give away. And so I started giving away what I had found. And man, I felt different. Yeah. You know, it changed me when I started giving. I got hooked on it.
Yeah.
You know, real. I got hooked on helping people. And you don't need drugs now. I'm high all the time. My wife says, right, "Baby, you don't need to drink or smoke. You're high all the time.
You need to calm down."
I know.
Yeah, I'm reminded, Todd, of a conversation we had with Ali Caffin. Actually, I have several conversations, but the one with Ali Caffin, and it ties back to something that came up a little while ago. We're afraid of showing up as who we really are because we're afraid people won't like us. But when we actually do show up as who we are, we find that, wow, people like us more.
Two things happen. People like you more.
Yeah.
Or the person you're afraid of showing yourself to is so wrapped up in their own problems, they don't even notice. You know, and what Kit will tell you is then there's another opportunity to help someone. Mm-hmm. That's been a lesson on the show several times now, Gareth. Yeah. You're right.
Well, I was afraid, and I had a coach in my life, and I was doing motivational speaking, and he goes, "It's excellent. It's a good message. Funny. It's got great takeaways. You're entertaining, high entertainment, whatever." And I said, "Well, what's missing?" He goes, "People don't know who you are. When you get done, it's like, who is he? Where'd he come from?" And I was like, "I ain't gonna tell him that part. You know, I'm already having a..." So anyway, he said, "Well, this is my last lesson to you, you know, as your sensei, you know, little grasshopper, you ready?" He said, "Be you and don't be afraid of it." And I started to do that. In corporate audiences, I would tell this story and everything shifted. It was like it took the mask off.
Yeah.
Scared little guy took the mask off and they said, "When you give me a piece of your life and show me, pull back the curtain and let me see, oh, I'm in. That's who I mean, I'm attracted to people that are real. The more authentic, the more the attraction." And that is true all the time. And the less authentic and the more plastic and fake, the less attractive. And isn't that true? When you meet somebody, It's like, show me who you are and I'm in.
We can have a business world with sort of sterilized, cauterized corporate relationships and everybody's just polite and it functions. But if you can bring the kind of tools that you've been using, Kit, to bear, and we can really open up, bring ourselves, we create such greater connectivity and we create such greater opportunity to have fun as well as be successful.
Yeah. Absolutely. We have these 40-day platforms that we use in prisons and schools, addiction recovery. And a lot of people think, okay, how's that going to work and how are you going to help my people?
Right.
But it all functions off of this system I created called Attitude Science. And it's got 12 principles. And it's what helps me to stay on the beam or get back on after I've fallen off. And they're eternal, universal, timeless. And, you know, for time's sake, I'll fly through them. I find what I look for. I find what I believe I deserve. I find that which is like myself. My thoughts become things. My words create my world. My moods are magnetic. What I focus on expands. What I resist persists. Passion is found in my unique gift. Joy hides in my pain. What I seek is seeking me, and all that I need I already possess. And so these are 12 foundational principles, and they work with everything for me. And so that's what I teach in those areas. But then I found 40 days is enough to change a habit. So I just kind of give people a chunk. Can you do this for 40 days? And especially, can y'all do it together? And then let's build off these principles. And then, you know.
We probably need to wrap this up because we're about out of time here. But you've just said something else there, Kit, which I want to just amplify because I think it's really, really important. 40 days is enough to change a habit. And a lot of this, a lot of what we're talking about in this particular episode, but more broadly in this show, Todd, is about helping people to change habits. It's helping people to look at things and end up changing the way they do things a little bit. So yeah, what does it take to change a habit?
Our brain is built to create habits. And if it wasn't, think about how hard life would be. But the brain is always practicing doing better tomorrow, whatever you're doing today, because it wants to create shortcuts so you can do other things. You don't have to worry about how to get dressed or how to drive a car or you got all that. So it's pathways. And the longer you've been doing something a certain way, the more of a highway it is in the brain. It's a little hard to change. And then you got something you've done for a week. It's easy to, you know, that's why gym memberships, you know what I'm saying? It's a new habit. But anyway, the 40 days will lock it. They say 28, 30 is kind of, well, I figured 40 is kind of a cool number. So, but anyway, you can change a habit, but it takes repetition. And then the brain does the work for you. It learns fast. Pay attention to what you're paying attention to because your brain is. And it's going to create it easier for you to get there tomorrow than it was today. It's built to do that. So,
Kit, thank you so much for being on the show.
This is good. We got to do this again.
Yeah. In the meantime, if people want to get a hold of you, Kit, before we let you go, how can they do that?
PowerOfPeaceProject.com. Power of Peace Project. They can Google Power of Peace. KitCummings.com. We'll get you there as well. And we're just, you know, Google Kit Cummings. I would love for you to check out the work and go where I'm invited. So anybody that's listening that if I've given you anything, then invite me and I will come.
Outstanding. Kit, thank you so much again for being on the show. From my co-host, Todd Schnick, from our guest, Kit Cummings, of the Power of Peace Project, and from myself, Gareth Young, it has been great to have you on the show with us today, everybody, and we'll join you again in a week.
You have been listening to A New Business Mindset, a radio show about the importance of authenticity, curiosity, and intimacy in business. To catch other great conversations and to learn more about the show, please visit us on newbusinessmindset.com. If you liked what you heard, and to really help us out, it'd be great if you'd visit and leave a review on iTunes. So thanks again for listening. A New Business Mindset will return next week.